Welcome back to We're Live, Pal. Unfortunately for this show, the very handsome Andrew Zarian, he is out of commission. He said that his internet is down. I'm just kind of wondering if he's having a blast out on vacation or something. I kind of hope that it is that he's out on vacation, that the internet didn't go out. That was a little bit of the excuse, you know, the call in sick excuse that we would use for school or work. But in his place, I have two people. You may have remembered Kyle Ross, a.k.a. the boss Kyle Ross, from a few episodes ago. He helped me out after Double or Nothing when Andrew was dealing with some family stuff. And for the first time, Ryan Drosty from Top Rope Nation, both of these guys, they do the Top Rope Nation stuff. Welcome to both of you. But let's start with Ryan because, you know, Kyle's a friendly face now, two-time We're Live Pal guest. But Ryan, how's it going?
It's going good. I was excited about this when you asked me to do the show. I didn't know Kyle was going to be on. You know, I was looking forward to talking with Andrew, but, you know, I just got out from seeing Top Gun Maverick for the second time. And when you told me Kyle was coming on, I was like, I get my wingman. It's perfect.
There you go.
It works.
Oh, there you go. Wow. What'd you think of that? Think of that one on the drive home? That was good.
I did, actually.
I figured I was going to say, man. That was too well written out, that wingman bit. Yep. Yeah.
All right, Kyle. How about you? How you doing?
I'm very excited to talk about Money in the Bank for the first time, I guess. Ryan and I didn't get a chance to do it because I was had my own issues going on July 3rd, but the internet wasn't out. I just straight up went on a tiki barge cruise.
Yeah, so let's talk about some Money in the Bank. I found the reception to Money in the Bank from people who enjoy, mostly people who enjoy WWE, but also people who are like kind of up and down with WWE. And it was like, oh, what a welcome surprise Money in the Bank was. And I was like bonking my head against the table because I was like, wait. Welcome surprise? Like, this was supposed to be one of the big shows of the year. They were going to hold it at the stadium that where the Raiders play. It was going to be like this, you know, it was like we had stadium show with WrestleMania. We're going to have stadium show with Money in the Bank. Then we're going to have stadium show with SummerSlam. And just with the idea of what a stadium show is, usually that means they up the, you know, the possibility of star power and big matches. And so I'm going into this thing going like, man, what a letdown. Whatever they do just is just a major letdown because of what the expectation that I had was. And then coming out of that show, I see all of these nice little, oh, that was a fun little plucky show. Like, how can WWE ever be the underdog here? Like, I don't understand. We'll get into some of the matches and some of the booking things because I do have some thoughts on that. But guys, first off, like, what was your impression going into the show? We can start with Ryan. And then, am I right that what they were building up and promising was much bigger than what we got?
Yeah, I didn't think it was a great show, Garrett. I'm not going to lie. I said that on a review show over on Top Rope Nation. And it was, you know, I mean, there were some fun parts to the show, no doubt about it. But like, when you think back to what your expectations would be, like you said, a stadium show, you know, we all expected Cody Rhodes to get his shining moment with the briefcase. And then, you know, the injury took that away. I mean, wrestling's just been full of injuries the last couple of months, unfortunately. But yeah, I mean, there just wasn't a lot to like about the show for me. I mean, it was, I said on our podcast, like a slightly below average show. I didn't, you know, I did see some of the comments too, where people were, oh, they blew me away or they exceeded my expectations. No way. not for me. Like I said, I like the tag match a lot. But outside of the tag match, I mean, it was pretty much what I expected, with one decision that I didn't really care for. But, you know, once the ball started traveling down that direction as we got to the end of the show, I kind of knew where we were going. So I prepped myself for that. But I mean, yeah, like you said, Garrett, when you go into this and you think this big weekend in Vegas at Allegiant Stadium, they change venues, you get this card shaken up, and It wasn't great, pal.
So Kyle, I'm going to ask you a slightly different version of this, the same question essentially, but how What does WWE do? How do they present themselves to their audience to where the audience looks at this show as something in which they overdeliver, and then I look at it as something in which they completely underdeliver? Like, how can they be the underdog in their own fans' eyes? That's the part that I don't get. It's very sort of manipulative, but how have they done that over these years?
Okay. The WWE, what it is now, it's a promotion filled of manufactured moments. And their core audience seems very receptive and, you could argue, just loves those manufactured moments. They just like to see a happening. They don't look at something like Liv Morgan cashing it on Ronda as backward psychology. They look at it as, oh, wow, something exciting is happening, even though it makes no sense in the traditional term. And there's enough people they've just ingrained that like it that they can get away with it. You know, my expectations coming to the show were very low. I mean, obviously, yes, it was embarrassing that they had to change venues, but this card looked dire on paper. I've talked about it in the past with Ryan. Money in the Bank is a gimmick that ship sailed with me many, many moons ago. I mean, it's just
4 years ago. 4 years ago,
we did a podcast when I was like, yeah, I did a podcast. I was like, is Money in the Bank just boring now? And just looking at the show overall, last month, you know, I don't think I've spoken more positively on a WWE match in years than I did Cody and Seth and Hell in a Cell, because there was something very real, very visceral with Cody. This show, Money in the Bank, you talked about it a little bit, Garrett, at the top. If people like WWE, yeah, they probably liked this show. But for me, this was a three-hour reminder of why I don't like WWE. Like, from the announcing, the agenting of the matches, the finishes, just the words they say are just terrible. I thought this was, I'm not going to sugarcoat it one iota, an abysmal show. Only the Royal, like, as far as premium live event goes in 2022, I think only the Rumble was worse than this.
So, okay, you mentioned some of the booking things, and I think we can actually go towards that, because I completely 100% agree. The Liv Morgan beating Ronda Rousey, the babyface taking advantage of the babyface being hurt, that is very backwards. But let's get to that in a second, because the one other thing I wanted to mention was the other part of this is they have told us consistently that they have one main star on the men's side, and that is Roman Reigns. When Brock Lesnar is there, he is the other big star on the men's side, neither of which whom are on this show. You had no Charlotte Flair, no Bayley. Obviously, Bayley's return is pending, I guess. She should be there soon. No Sasha Banks. Obviously, we know why. But from a star power perspective...
No Cody.
No Cody, because he was hurt, which Ryan mentioned. Like, has there ever been a least star power engine premium level event in history of WWE? I was trying to think about that. Like, has there ever been a show where so many of their top guys were just like, we're good. You guys can have this show without us. Because there was nobody on top. Nobody. Like, who they tell us are big stars, there was nobody. And I was just perplexed at how they were selling this show and being able to put this on Peacock and say, this is what we do. This is our gigantic show. Look at all these people. And the crowd was definitely hot. And from what Big Dave said on Wrestling Observer Radio, he said merch was through the roof. So some of this is exactly what the fan base wants. But when I look at what WWE tries to present itself as, which is a kind of bigger than life thing, that was the most smaller than life show that I've seen in quite a while from them.
I mean, to your point, Garrett, look what they did on Raw with the women's with Liv Morgan, right? Like everyone talks about Liv Morgan had this big, it was a moment, like Kyle said. I cannot be confident that they're going to carry her forward and make her a focal point at the top of the women's card, because how many times have we seen someone get a women's title in WWE and it meant nothing for them? Nikki Ash, right? For example, yeah. Everyone loved that.
True.
It was much like the same dialogue at the time. Everyone loves her. She's worked very hard for, like, the same stuff people are saying about Liv Morgan right now. What did that do for her? I would like to see Liv Morgan get a sustained push, but I have no faith that they're going to do that. And then you fast forward to Raw on Monday night, and who comes out thinking that they deserve a title shot against Liv Morgan, the two people who lost at Money in the Bank, right? I mean, you get Carmella out there, you get Natty out there. So it shows, I mean, just in the women's division, you know, men's division, a whole nother discussion. As you said, Roman's gone through everybody, but they don't have any star power. They have nobody for challengers. So we're going to throw out these people that just lost in championship matches on the pay-per-view, on the very last show. It's dire straits, Kyle.
Yeah, the weekly TV doesn't really matter, and it's crazy what I, you know, it goes back to what I said about manufactured moments. As long as their audience gets these manufactured moments, I guess they're happy. You know, to Ryan's point too, it was crazy that the two women who were challengers at the pay-per-view, Carmella and Natty, they won like these multi-person matches, and the people who lost those multi-person matches, almost all of them wound up in the Money in the Bank anyway, so like, what's the stakes involved in winning that? If you're just, well, you're going to be in position to get another opportunity if you lose anyway. So, you know, you talk about the star power. Yeah, I mean, Orton wasn't there either. You can add him on that list. It is kind of crazy that WWE can get away with the show with that little star power. In terms of historically where it ranks, I would have to look at some of those Thunderdome shows. though, like, I was looking at like a random show in 2020. It was pretty dumb. I think it was like SummerSlam 2020. Like, that card in retrospect looks like, oh my god, this was SummerSlam. It was like, you know, Seth Rollins against, you know, Dom Mysterio and The Fiend against Braun. I mean, there are probably some worse ones, but I get what you're saying. But if you're WWE and you can get away with it, what's the impetus to try harder or get more star power?
Yeah, because I guess I look at it a little bit differently, because when I saw that card, what that card says to me is WWE just goes, okay, we sold out the building. We don't need to do anything special here. Let's just save all the good stuff for SummerSlam. To, you know, that's going to be in the stadium. And so I don't... you know, I just don't want to hammer WWE. I didn't like that show either. But actually, let's talk about what good could come out of it. But because our trust levels with their creative are very low, in 2 weeks, this could be a ridiculous conversation. And we'll start with what Kyle said about Liv. Liv is somebody who I think should be gradually going up a level. I find that Liv has joy in the ring. I find that she really, it looks like she really enjoys what she's doing. And you can't say that for the way everybody, you know, works on TV. But when I watch her wrestle, I go, man, this is someone who really is having a great time out there. What a great baby face. That's kind of how I see her. Now, the booking, the creative is a bit backwards. When she went to run in on Ronda, I was like, oh, she's going to say, I see you're hurt. Let's do this match on SmackDown. I'll give you a week. And then Ronda still comes in hobbled in SmackDown, and then there's some other stuff going on, and she wins the title there. But no, she just attacks this hurt babyface herself, and then we get the love fest at the end when she does win. Now let's take the sort of maybe the backwards creative as far as how we learned wrestling. Let's just look at it from moving forward. And Kyle, we'll start with you since you had mentioned it. Is Liv Morgan, I believe, being in the mix is actually good for WWE. But my worry is that she's going to sort of fall by the wayside and that belt's going right back to Ronda at SummerSlam. And maybe they think that is, oh, look, it just shows that she could be at that level and then she's going to win it again and it'll be even bigger. But to me, I'm like, if she's not really ready to have a reign here, maybe we should have held that off until we were comfortable giving her a long one. But do you expect her to hold the belt past SummerSlam? Do you expect it to be a thing with Ronda again and Ronda gets the belt back? Like, what are you looking for as far as your expectation to Liv Morgan here?
Very low expectations. I would not be shocked at all if she loses to Ronda at SummerSlam. They've got a lot invested in Ronda, unless if that relationship has deteriorated more than to a degree that we don't know about. I assume Ronda's still going to be in the main event mix for WrestleMania. Becky Lynch is going to be in that mix. You've got Bianca Belair. I just don't think there's room for Liv Morgan at the top when you look to like as far out as WrestleMania. I mean, could she hold the title for a couple months and then it means nothing after she loses? Yeah, that's exactly what's going to happen. I just see that cash in as, okay, look, we do Money in the Bank every year. Somebody has to win the briefcase and do something with it. And this is what, 5 years in a row now? They've had the woman's winner hold on to it for less than 24 hours. It's just rinse, repeat. And most of those runs don't mean anything long term. Ryan mentioned Nikki Ash, last year. That was and we knew going in that was dumb. Nobody had any faith in that. And look at her now. She wasn't even in the Money in the Bank match this year, which is the kiss of death.
Is she on TV?
When they need someone to like lose, yeah, she'll be on. But that's it. I mean, her days of winning, I don't know, they were doing stuff with her and Doudrop, but that's about it there. So no, I have no faith that like is she going to be at the top of the card as we roll into Mania season next year? I'd be stunned to answer your question.
What do you think, Ryan?
I think the whole thing, yeah, exactly what Kyle said. They looked at this is the chance to make a moment with no thought to the long-term process at hand, because like you said, Garrett, you've got a baby face cashing in on a baby face. Let me just ask you this. Now, let's say, Garrett, you are this like hardcore Liv Morgan fan. You never miss a match. You got the posters on the wall. You got the fan website and everything.
I would have to be about 15 or else that would be really
yeah, creepy, I was gonna say,
right?
Yeah, I was that'd be really, I was gonna say, please. I was waiting for Garrett to say, oh, actually I am.
Yeah, you're describing me to a T. Like, but wouldn't you feel cheated? Like, you've waited all these years for her to get a championship and that's how it happens? Like, as a babyface, wouldn't you want her to like declare she's cashing in, like we've seen some faces do in the past, and get the victory in a hard fought match? It's just such a cheap way for a babyface to win the title. And then if they're just going to turn around and drop it right back to Ronda at SummerSlam, there's no purpose to it other than a moment for one night. And by the way, Ronda, again, a babyface, if they actually do Ronda and Liv Morgan at SummerSlam and she loses it in that stadium, it's just going to be a complete revolt. I mean, it's going to be a terrible reaction. I mean, I think if Charlotte's on her way back, they should do Charlotte against Liv Morgan if they want to switch the title up. But or maybe Charlotte comes out and costs Ronda. So who knows? But I have no faith at all that this will turn into a long-term win for Liv Morgan. I hope it is. I would like for it to be. I think that she could be good at the top of the card, but history says that ain't happening here.
I was just gonna say, I think Ronda, you don't want to say, oh, they can't see this, but they have to see it. Like, to me, I think they look at it by doing the rematch. When I heard that, my first thought is Ronda's going to beat her like a drum. And in WWE's mind, that's heat. Yeah. Right? Like that they took the moment away. Like, Liv had this great moment and Ronda, does something devious and takes it away from her. That's what I see happening. Or I think they should do, to be honest with you.
You know, the other thing about this is, the other way to look at this, and you have to be really dialed in like the three of us are to even think this way, but I almost think maybe it was best that they did it this way, because if they didn't, then there's opportunity for Vince to fall out of favor and all of a sudden she's on the shelf, or she gets Damian Sandow with this thing, which would be even worse. So some part of me goes, maybe this was the right way to do it, because Vince could become, frustrated or lose interest or whatever. And then it's just, oh, this poor woman has this briefcase and all they want to do is just beat her and beat her and beat her. So maybe this was the best thing to do here.
Well, to what I said earlier, 5 years in a row, the women's winner has cashed in within 24 hours. I think they do it partly because they don't want Vince to get bored. And they just have chosen that, well, the women are going to do it that way. Yeah. They don't want to have two briefcase holders. We don't want Vince to sour on two people. So, you know, it's just a way to arbitrarily pop a rating or something like that, or just give people one of these manufactured moments. And that's what it is. And Ryan said something that's very interesting. Like, if you're a Liv Morgan fan, wouldn't you feel cheated? I think like the core WWE audience doesn't. And that's what just has me scratching my head. Like, we could say this stuff to we're blue in the face, and I think we're right. But there's just a part of that audience that just, they just like these people, and they're just happy that they win no matter how. And they don't even care how the reign goes. They just want to see them earn this line item on their resume that Michael Cole can repeat 6 months from now, and doesn't mean the paper, it isn't worth the paper it's printed on. They don't care how her run goes at all. I don't think they just care that she got a moment.
Here's a question, and this may be something I have to ask Dave Meltzer, but if you are a fan who doesn't necessarily check in on the weekly TV time and time again, you know, maybe you, if Raw's on, maybe, and you're home, maybe you'll throw it on. I can't imagine you're going to watch for 3 hours, but maybe your goal as a WWE fan is like, okay, I have Peacock. I want to watch all the major shows. So really your only connection with the product is from Big Show to Premium Live Event to Premium Live Event. And in that scenario, what you just stated, Kyle, this whole thing about moments versus any sort of meaning to what is going on, maybe that audience is actually really happy with these type of moments because there's a reason for them to sit through these shows. And there's not a reason for them to watch Raw necessarily because this kind of stuff doesn't happen on Raw. Raw is just the, you know, the bad connective tissue. But if you want to see something actually happen, you got to go to the Premium Live Event stuff.
Well, there's an irony about that statement. You might not be wrong at all. But what I don't want to say infuriates me because that's a little harsh, but it makes me chuckle, I guess, a little bit inside is you'll see these people on Twitter, WWE apologists, talk about how it's all about, you know, they'll criticize AEW because AEW doesn't have stories, right? And the expression Vince used, wasn't it in Beyond the Mat, we make movies. And that's such crap.
Like, well, they don't do it anymore, for sure.
No, they don't. I mean, at the time, but I mean, like now, it's just crap that they do that. I mean, it's one of the most, you know, if you actually do pay attention to all the television, you're like a fool. It's really
you're not rewarded in any way.
Mm-hmm. Now,
you know, the reason why people watch though is because they were watching in 97 and then they were getting rewarded every week by what happens next. They were watching 98 and there would be this cliffhanger of something and then you got to watch on Monday again to see what happened. Like that I think people go, gosh, you know, if it would only be like that again. Well, it's not going to be like that again because the business is so different today and where they make their money is in such a different place than what it was back then. But yeah, like, that is not the same product and it's never going to be that same product again. Look, we could talk about this all day, but I do want to move on to one more thing with Money in the Bank. Austin Theory. Now, if I was thinking of top prospects in WWE, everyone would say Braun Baker, right? Carmelo Hayes, though he's probably a little small for Vince, and that may sort of figure itself out. I hope not, because I think he's so talented. Maybe you even like the Creed brothers at NXT. I've stopped watching NXT completely, but you know they are folks who, you know, you're sort of looking at as prospects. Austin Theory would be on that list to me. But here's my worry with Austin Theory, because they put him with Vince, and so, you know, you got Vince, old man Vince, slapping him in the face on TV and, you know, trying to give him a little bit of advice. And then you have the match with Pat McAfee and all that stuff. So you have all that stuff. So Austin Theory is actually on a higher trajectory, or he's in bigger moments in their TV than mid-carders would be. So if I had, like, if I was thinking about this in the way that you would think of other prospects in other sports, you're like, oh, there's this gradual climb of Austin Theory, and then at some point he's going to reach the peak and he's going to be the next guy. But because of how WWE books today, I don't actually feel that is going to be the case. I feel that Austin Theory is going to get to a certain point and then he's going to lose. He's going to go back to the bottom and then they're going to beat him. And then we may never see him at that level again. That is a very negative way to think. That is a very, it's for me, it's just, I don't like seeing things happen where I get tricked, you know, like you were saying about the TV. If you watch the TV, there's no payoff. You feel like a fool. I don't want to feel like a fool. So I have this slightly negative thought about where Austin Theory is going. But if I had confidence in what they were doing, I would look at this Austin Theory thing, or Theory, I guess we should call him, and just go, man, this guy's really cool. I can't wait to see what happens next. Because that's what we were seeing with Triple H, with The Rock, with Brock Lesnar, with Randy Orton, all these guys from our wrestling past of watching. Austin Theory should be on a similar trajectory, but I just don't believe it. Like, Ryan, what do you think about what they're doing with him?
I think you're right that he would be a guy you'd look at as a handful of guys that has very, very high ceiling. But the problem is bad creative can sink you forever. You know, and he's been plastered all over television with just atrocious creative. Like, he's now everyone looks at him as he's Vince's boy, but the television has been so bad. You know, the selfie thing is just, to me, it's go away heat. It's not good heat. It's go away heat. And it makes me want to change the channel. And, you know, you look at when he won Money in the Bank, and I saw barely any reaction from the crowd. Some people were booing, but most people just staring like, okay, whatever. And then they're walking up the aisles as the show goes off the air. And so, yeah, if you want him to be one of the top guys for the future, I mean, we've seen them have talented guys before who got terrible, terrible creative and they never reached that level because it was hard to get that out of your mind. The other problem is that this company doesn't have patience anymore with people finding themselves. You know, if someone is put into that top level spot and given like a chance at it and it doesn't do well, they move on and say, oh, they couldn't hang, and they go on to somebody else. It's not like, you know, back in the 90s, once in a while, late 90s, they would try some stuff out maybe and let people find their way. Now it's very quick, you know? So it's hard for me to imagine this working out for the better right now, just because I think they could have gone a different way in Money in the Bank. I don't see it as good heat. And, you know, I see it as indifference amongst the fans right now with him. He's a talented guy, but I think the creative has been so bad that it's going to sink him for now.
All right. I think the consensus for the three of us now, I'm sure there's people who still, after all that we said, they're like, no, I still like that show. So you guys can just shut up. But I think the consensus is Street Profits and the Usos, really good match. Probably not even their best match. I think they have another level that they can get to because both teams are so talented. So that, you know, if you want to see something that I'm sure that all three of us like, that's the match that we all like. But let's move on to talking about...
It was
about,
okay.
Not for Kyle. We had this talk on
text. It was okay. That finish reeked, bro.
Yeah, I didn't like it at all either. I didn't like the finish.
I mean, there's that big talking point of, you know, are we going to get a singles push for Montez Ford? And, you know, they've let Dawkins shine a little bit more in their matches of late, I've noticed. You know, him doing the big spots. Maybe, you know, he's trying to get some attention if he is on his own. We'll see. I like the match. I mean, it did suffer from what a lot of WWE longer matches suffer from, where it was just very grinding to a halt for the first half of the match because they're working a long match and they work a slower style than you would see in an AEW or a New Japan. But they got me late and I was really into it late. Like you said, they've had better matches, but it was the best match of the show. It wasn't a great show, so that's not a high bar, but that was the one that I enjoyed the most. And I'm just really intrigued with the direction they take the Street Profits here over the next couple of months. And we talked about this on our recap show the other day, is now the time for Montez Ford? Does that hurt Dawkins? Is that a risk that you have to take because you need to strike while the iron's hot? And Ford seems like he has a lot of momentum right now. You know, they need more top guys. As we talked about earlier in the show, he could be a top guy if they actually give him a chance to shine and don't saddle him with bad creative. And I mean, they've been on commentary, they've been talking, they've been leading you to believe that they are going to be splitting up, you know, talking about, oh, he's added 20, 25 pounds of muscle. He's, you know, he's looking like a single star. They said on SmackDown, I think last week, that, oh, maybe we've heard some rumors. There's been some dissension among the Street Profits. And
The dirt sheets.
Those rumors. Yeah, yeah, the dirt sheets.
I wonder if they're doing
leading
that
you
angle.
To think that it might be coming. Yeah.
Yeah, but I wonder if they're doing that angle by using the term dirt sheets to not do the turn to convince their audience further that dirt sheets are always wrong.
True. Yeah.
Like that's something that they would do. I actually wanted to talk about Austin Theory more if I could for a second. Because
go for it and then we'll move on.
Okay, you guys made a lot of good points and I wanted to pick up one of them. You know, in terms of where Austin Theory could like end up, Garrett, you're talking about, I can easily see him sliding into the role that Baron Corbin had a couple years ago, where the promotion wrongly thinks it's good heel heat when it's bad heel heat, and he's the guy they trot out there. And they think, oh, man, the crowd's like really pissed that this guy won or that they're getting this guy, but it's actually groan-inducing heat. Also, I'm not saying the guy's not talented, but it's definitely way more telling than showing with him so far and this quote-unquote push he's gotten. They tell you he's the youngest U.S. champion of all time. Well, was the reign any good? You know, he was the third wheel in a very confusing Vince McMahon, Pat McAfee deal at WrestleMania. Okay, that was, a good spot, but he was an afterthought eventually. And we're supposed to forget that he lost to the SmackDown color commentator. At the Elimination Chamber, he got the jobber treatment from Lesnar just because he was willing to take the big spot. I don't even think it's like a real push. And what's sad to the earlier point is I think WWE just may will it into existence by constantly just telling you that he's good, but they really, you know, they put him in positions to succeed, but don't really, he doesn't really like step up, or he doesn't really, they don't allow him to the point Ryan made about creative. They don't allow him to succeed in these situations where maybe people in the past, hey, this is a big chance and they show you what they can do. He just kind of seems like a generic guy Vince McMahon would like. And we've seen a lot of those types over the last 20 years.
All right. Let's move on, because I do want to talk some AEW with both of you. I kind of want to get your temperature with AEW's product right now. So we were all at Double or Nothing, and then Forbidden Door has happened. Blood and Guts, we just got through Blood and Guts. And now I wonder if we're going to get a little bit of a reset. Like, let's take a breath here, AEW. We don't have a pay-per-view until All In, which is in September. So that gives us a couple months here to kind of like not go 150 miles an hour. But Ryan, where are you with the product? Are you happy with the product? We're all critics. So, none of us are going to be like, I'm the biggest AEW fan of all time. Like you can celebrate the product when it does good, and then you criticize the product when it's not as good. So where are you with AEW post Blood and Guts, which we saw on Wednesday?
I would say I'm more warm than cold right now. I'm not like hot, and I'm not on the hot side for the promotion. You know, like I thought going into Forbidden Door, they had a lot of pretty poor television, and I was always going to order it because, like you said, we critique the product and do podcasts and stuff. And then that was a very good show. And then I thought Blood and Guts was really enjoyable, like Dynamite last week a lot. So now I'm starting to warm up again. I think they have certain things going on that are very interesting that draw me in. You know, like it's hard to blame them too much when they've had so much thrown at them injury wise with Danielson and with Punk and so on, and Omega's still not back. I'm interested in Eddie Kingston. Eddie Kingston to me is on fire right now, doing just great character work. Kyle made the point on our show that he would have been a great person to have the interim world title, and I can't disagree. I think that would have been very interesting. So I'm interested in what they're doing with him and Claudio. So that's drawing me in. Of course, FTR is excellent right now. I don't know what the status is on Bowen's knee. But man, I can't wait for the Acclaim to get even more shine.
Well, he was jumping up and down on Rampage when Caster did his entrance. He was like jumping and running. So I mean, it seems like his knee looks okay.
Hopefully soon then. Yeah, I'm a huge fan of those guys. You know, so there's stuff going on that I am interested in. But like you said, they got 2 months now. They'll do some special editions of Dynamite and whatnot. But they got to kind of find their way. They got to figure out when Punk's going to get back. You know, is he going to be back for all out? That would be prime time to get him back, obviously, to do that unification match. But I would say I'm warming up again after about a month to month and a half where I was going pretty cold on the promotion, and Dynamite just wasn't feeling like must-see television for me anymore.
So Kyle, similar question, but I'm gonna slightly adjust it a little bit, which is because all three of us, we've been watching wrestling since we were kids, and WWE at some point became the only game in town. I don't know if you were a giant WCW fan in the mid to late 90s, but there was always something with having two promotions. And it was funny because when I was a kid, it was WWF versus NWA, Jim Crockett. And the aftermags would sort of pit Hogan and Flair against each other. So to me as a kid, I was like, well, I'm a Hogan guy, so thus I have to like WWF more than I like Jim Crockett Promotions. But as I got older and I started watching a lot more Flair, I was like, oh, like this competition is stupid. Like there's no competition. It's just you have two different TV shows that you really like. And so when WWF or WWE is the only game in town, unless you just decided that you were an Impact fan, there was some ROH stuff, but it wasn't the same. You had to keep up with it in a different way. And now that we're back to having two competitive television shows, wrestling shows, companies, I wonder if we have such high expectations for AEW because we so desperately want it to succeed so that we continue to have this two-brand wrestling promotion thing. And maybe we critique them a little bit too hard because we're also just hoping that, you know, something is just way better than what we've been getting with WWE. But same question as Ryan, which is what's your temperature, but also just the, you know, are we harder on AEW as wrestling critics than we necessarily would be because of this whole two shows in town kind of game?
Well, I think some people would argue that a lot of people aren't hard enough for the reasons you laid out, that people are so desperate they want it to succeed. I don't think that's the case at all. To what you're saying, yes, I think there is a certain standard that we all want from AEW. We all want it, you know, not, I don't necessarily think there's like a monolithic, you know, way that a large portion of the fan base all thinks the same and wants it to be, but I think there's certain things they want it to be. And I would look back at last week's television. I hope Tony Khan learned some lessons, because for the first time in several weeks on Dynamite, that was a show designed where almost every segment was designed to get one person over, or in the case of the main event, like one team, even though by the end, the focus was kind of on Claudio and Kingston. And that's what it should be. I feel that there was so much cross-pollination there for a couple weeks, and that no one was really getting over in any segment. And that was the problem with the television. But last week you had a main event that was well promoted. I'd be interested to know if you guys agree, I think Ryan does, that Blood and Guts should not be an hour-long match. But I had read a tweet from Brandon Thurston that AEW had been looking at their recent television. The ratings had been down in that second hour, and they wanted to have a match that could hold a nice second hour rating. And that match did. It was mission accomplished in that regard. And I wonder if Tony's going to take a step back and say, hey, we had a well-promoted main event, several week build. We made it the focal point of the show. It took up an hour. And that's what I'm going to go back to doing. Because if you thought like the TV was red hot last summer, they were promoting matches 3 weeks out all the time. And then Rampage came and he kind of lost control a little bit, I think. So my temperature on the product, no, it's not as hot as it was 6 months ago, certainly last fall. And injuries have played a huge role in that, like Ryan mentioned. But I think even with the injuries, he's got a lot to play with, he meaning Tony, and he's just got to push some people. Again, you can't worry about keeping your number eight babyface happy, because your number eight babyface is the number eight babyface for a reason, because there's seven people better than him on that side of the ledger. You've got to push. I think you've got to get back to an established hierarchy. And I know a lot of people at the top of the hierarchy are out now. Well, you got to fill those spots. You just can't sit, twiddle your thumbs and say, CM Punk, are you okay this week? You got to push new people. And I hope that's what he does.
It's a great point. The 1 hour match trick, I think I first realized it when some of those three, you know, we've had 3 hour Raws forever now. Like it's not like it's a brand new thing, but there were some shows where WWE would do these long gauntlet matches. And so you'd have like six guys, and then each of them are having like a full length, you know, 10 to 15 minute match. And it's like going for, you know, half of the show. And what we realized is the ones that worked, the rating actually increased for every segment, or just about every segment. And so I think it's very smart for them to do that kind of match. Now, it was too long for my eyes. Once they added that sixth person, I thought, you know, that's what made it a little bit too long. I think 4-on-4 or 5-on-5 is best for that kind of match. Because as we know, as fans of the original War Games, the match beyond didn't really start until everyone was in the ring. And so, you know, when they're trying to tell us, oh, yeah, wait, you know, this match isn't really technically, nothing's going to happen. You need to keep waiting and waiting and waiting. I think some of it was what Kyle was talking about, which is they wanted to stretch these quarter hours to have good ratings. But at the same time, it was telling the fans, oh, yeah, yeah, you can turn off the TV now and just come back in 20 minutes and the match will still be going. Like, it was really a way to say, we're going till the end of this show, FYI. So if you were like, this stuff is not that interesting, I'm just going to come back with 5 minutes left in the show and I'll probably see everything I need to see. That's the other side of tailoring it in that way.
And that was always the fear why 20 years ago, no matches went long. There was no two-segment wrestling matches 20 years ago on TV. I remember when they did the Angle Lesnar Iron Man match on SmackDown, which was taped. Dave wrote a very long piece talking about what a risk that was, and that didn't do that well in the ratings. But the audience is different now, as you mentioned, because it's worked on Raw and it worked on Wednesday.
Very much so. Okay, I have one more question about AEW for the both of you, and then we'll move on to the last segment of the show, and that is, who is over? Who is the one wrestler? Obviously, CM Punk is on the shelf, so it could be him. Jon Moxley is there. Kenny Omega also on the shelf. Could be him. Maybe it's Thunder Rosa to some folks. But I'm trying to figure out who resonates with you guys. And the reason why this matters is because we are the wrestling fan who grew up and watched this stuff so organically and didn't fall off. Now, there are pockets of times when we did fall off, I'm sure, as we were in high school and college and, you know, starting our families and all that stuff. Like, but there, you know, the Observer is what kind of kept me going, really. It wasn't WWE TV. It was really the Wrestling Observer. But the reason why I like your viewpoints is because you have sort of stayed with pro wrestling for a very long time. And you are now not necessarily just this diehard fan, but now you're sort of a critic, like, right? You watch it through a little bit of a different lens. It's an analytical lens. But who do you see? And there may not be anybody, and we'll start with you, Ryan, who connects with you in a way that maybe a wrestler connected with you in yesteryear on this current AEW roster right now.
Well, for me personally, it's probably Jon Moxley right now. I said a minute ago that Eddie Kingston seems to be very over with the crowd. I'm a big fan of what he's doing too. Like, he has, much the same way as Jon Moxley, he has this emotional attachment with the fans that you can like feel when he's out there. And that's always missing from people over the last 20 years. You know, like, are they actually getting that emotional buy-in from the crowd? And I see that with Jon Moxley. I definitely see it with Eddie Kingston. For me, like, if I was not watching wrestling, but I was checking the results to follow what someone was doing, and we're only considering the people that are working right now that aren't injured, it would be probably Moxley, to be honest with you. He's just such a relatable guy. I mean, it goes above and beyond what's been happening on wrestling, you know, just reading his book, listening to him on podcasts like he's done with you guys in the past. He's just it just seems like an overall good dude. And to me, Jon Moxley is over. And I see it from the audience at large, too. But I think Eddie Kingston is the one who's kind of on the ascent right now. You know, like, he did that great article for Players Tribune that a lot of people read. And that seemed to be like kind of a turning point for him. He's always been great on the mic. and he's able to get you to buy in with his mic work, certainly. And so he seems like he could get there for me as well. But yeah, as far as my own personal taste go, it's probably Moxley right now.
Okay. And Kyle's going to see the setup to this because I'll probably ask him the same thing when he answers. But if Moxley is the guy, or if Kingston is the guy, does it feel like they are strapping the rocket to the guy in the way that we saw wrestling when we were younger, to where that is the focal point and it's less about the sum of all of these parts and it is more about this one person who is connecting and we are just promoting them in a way that makes them bigger than life?
No, I don't think wrestling's that way anymore. I think, you know, AEW would be well served to, you know, basically do most things the opposite of the way WWE is. But I think in the case of both brands, it largely is being sold when you buy a ticket. You're not just buying for one guy, for one match. I think you're buying the complete package. You know, I think in the case of All Out last year, CM Punk was maybe the exception to that rule. But, you know, I mean, you look at Moxley, in his case, to your question, Garrett. He wins the interim title at the pay-per-view, and then he kind of feels like the third most important guy in the babyface team at the end of the match.
He is very, almost like giving in that way. And not that he's writing these storylines, right? But sometimes a top guy would put their foot down and go, like, I got to be
in the work for me, brother.
Imagine Triple H in the same role, right? Just wins the interim title. Then he's in this tag match. Kingston and Claudio are a big focal point. Triple H is figuring his way into that scenario so that he is not kind of left out, right? Like, that's how.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, Triple H would beat all nine guys by himself. But, I mean, to answer the question that was first posed to Ryan and that I'll get to, I think Kingston is the guy who, week in, week out, I am the most engrossed in AEW. A common criticism you'll hear of a lot of modern wrestlers is that they're playing wrestler. Like, you know, they'll say something because it sounds like what a wrestler should say.
You know, I hate that saying. You know, I hate that because here's why I hate it. I've never been a pro wrestler before. It would be like if I was to say another actor wasn't a real actor. Like, I've never been in those shoes before, so my analysis of whether somebody is playing pro wrestler or not, like, I don't feel like I have a credible response to that because I've never been in those shoes before. That's why I hate that saying. And a lot of times that saying comes from people who they hear someone say that and then they go, oh, that sounds cool, and now I'm gonna parrot it. And I get frustrated because so many people say that these days. And I'm like, how would you know? You can barely put two sentences together on Twitter. Like, how would you even possibly know what it takes to be a pro wrestler? But go ahead. Sorry.
I'll say anything so Ryan knows that.
I'm going to rein him in all the time. Yeah.
But no, with Kingston, to the point is like, okay, like he comes out at that Anarchy in the Arena match, is bloody, carrying, you know, a can of gasoline. I think there's a lot of people, if they did that in this business, you'd laugh at him. Like, what is this? With him, it's like, oh, Eddie Kingston's ready to go. And I think, you know, a big problem with me when I watch a lot of people is they don't, like, seem cool. You know, particularly WWE. I mean, like, that Money in the Bank was just, like, 3 hours of uncool people coming out. Eddie Kingston, to me, when I see him, this is just a cool guy. You know, he just wants to fight. He sounds cool. He looks cool. The things that he says he wants to do sound cool. And I believe Eddie Kingston, right? That's always the thing. Like, you want to believe what these wrestlers are saying. You know, I mean, obviously there's a great deal of suspension and disbelief when it comes to suspension of belief when it comes to wrestling. But I just think, you know, Kingston to me is the most compelling week-to-week guy on AEW. That's not to say John Moxley's bad. John Moxley's having a tremendous year in the ring, probably the best year of his entire career, quite frankly. And another guy that we shouldn't forget about, although I think by design they're trying to make us forget, is MJF. When he's around, he's someone that I always would pay attention to. And you think about it, he does it mostly with promos. He's a guy who doesn't wrestle very often. But
Wardlow had an opportunity to be cool, right? Like, he had that opportunity coming out of that match to be cool. And then they started letting him cut promos, and I was like, that cool anymore.
Wardlow's world ain't it, man.
No. That's like the worst Nintendo Switch game that hasn't been created yet. I will say this, and I've said it on so many podcasts, and I will continue to say it because I just want to put that little time stamp on it. I actually told Moxley, I think it was on air of a show that we were doing, about my idea for Kingston to have the Mankind run when Mankind beat The Rock to win the title. I was like, Kingston should be the one to beat Kenny, and then we get, you know, Kenny to win it back at some point. But I thought that would be such a great moment. But I don't think they're interested in putting titles on guys unless that guy is cemented as, you know, the top player in the game. And I'm not sure Eddie Kingston will necessarily be that.
No, I actually saw you make that point at some point. Maybe it was on your Facebook page or in your group's page or something. And that was actually an excellent comparison, in my opinion, because you're right. It's a moment where it's a moment that will be real, not manufactured, to our earlier discussion, right? There will be people that they're not just genuinely happy because something happened. They'll be genuinely happy because it happened to Eddie Kingston.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what moments like that should be, not just like, oh, wow, we saw a title change and who cares if this person does. And yeah, I think that would be actually Eddie. He doesn't, you know, this goes to your, I don't know if Eddie Kingston is built to be a long-term champion in a major national promotion like AEW, but I just look at the lay of the land right now, and Ryan alluded to it. I think he would have been a more interesting option than Moxley as the interim champion, just because of the backstory with Punk too. And, you know, they worked him. That was so good. So yeah, I don't know. Yeah. For me, it's Kingston.
All right. Let's move
almost. The promos between Eddie Kingston and Punk going into a unification match would have been outstanding.
Yeah.
They might even get a little too close to the vest there with those promos. Mm-hmm. All right. Last segment here. We only got a few minutes, so I won't dig too deep in here, but kind of like, let's get to know Kyle and Ryan's tastes a little bit. If you are a fan of Top Rope Nation, you know them well. If you're in their Facebook group, you know them well. But for those who don't, let's not think too hard here. Let's, you know, just whatever comes to the front of your brain here. And I will start with Ryan. If we take only the Hogan years until now, who is on your WWF Mount Rushmore?
Oh, man. Let's see. Only so Hogan counts, the Hogan years.
So 84 until now.
Are we saying my personal favorite or who is most important to the business?
However,
my
you
own
want
personal
to do
favorite,
it. Just go.
Okay. All right, my own personal favorites would probably be Bret Hart, Randy Savage, Steve Austin, and boy, a fourth spot's always a rotating one. Probably The Rock. Obviously Hogan has to be included if you're talking star power and importance to the business. But if you're talking my own personal favorites during that time period, yeah, it's Bret, it's Savage. It's Austin. Actually, you know what? I might go with Danielson instead of The Rock. Yeah, I'll go with Daniel Bryan at the time. Yeah.
All right, Kyle.
I'll answer the question a different way because, as Ryan knows, I don't really have favorite wrestlers. I just like good wrestling. So the clear bet, this is very easy. I mean, if you're doing it by like just bedrocks of the company, it like actually has to be Hogan, Austin, Rock, Cena.
Yes, as the four. That's how Andrew and I answer that question.
It's in our. I think the only other, if you expanded this to include the San Martino years, obviously then it gets a little more interesting who you're dropping.
Yes,
but we're not doing that for this argument's sake. I don't know, in terms of my favorite wrestlers, Randy Savage was on that list. Mick Foley would be on that list. Like, favorite always means, I like this person more than most people. Daniel Bryan would be on that list. And, I don't know, CM Punk, I guess. Those are four guys that I think that I like more than most people who follow WWE.
So the holdovers, in how Andrew and I looked at it, the holdovers would have been obviously Brett, Savage, Sean, and Taker. WWE's retelling of their history would make sure that The Undertaker was on that list. And they would probably drop Hogan just because they're not friends with Hogan right now. I think how Kyle said it is kind of how I would look at that list as well. But, you know, all the guys on Ryan's list are probably on that, would be on my next 4 to 8 as well.
That's why I asked. That's why I wanted to clarify. Is this business importance or my own personal taste? Because, it would have to be Hogan for sure. Cena on there, probably Austin and The Rock. Yeah.
Can I anger a bunch of people to listen to this podcast real quick?
Go for it.
Like with The Undertaker, man, it's crazy how they've canonized this guy. There is so much of, and look, he was around for so long in 25 years. There is so much in those 25 years that is just absolutely awful. Like just brutally bad.
Yeah.
Stuff.
I'm not the biggest Taker guy.
You know, like his mid 90s run. I mean, I guess more power to him that he was able to stay relevant with all those horrible feuds. The American Badass run. My God, I don't think, I mean, if it wasn't for Triple H, I wouldn't have had a least favorite. The Undertaker was my least favorite guy in the business. And that's like a long time.
Yeah.
He had like this 4-year run where he got to work once. Like, I don't know. Like everyone's opinion on him just changed. I don't know.
Garrett, with that kind of lead in that Kyle just gave you, this is where, like, as we're doing a live show, I get my notepad ready and write down the times. Like, am I gonna have to edit this later? What's he gonna do with offend somebody? Yeah.
No, I think we're fine. We have 3 minutes left, so I want to ask you one more question, which is the draft, the pro wrestler draft. Now the field is anybody in the world of professional wrestling who is active today, if you were starting your own company, obviously business counts because you want to make money. Fandom counts because you want some popularity. But who would be the number one pick in all of the wrestlers active today in your pro wrestling draft? And actually, Kyle, we'll start with you.
Wow. Because this kind of flies in the face of what we were just talking about, that like, can you actually just build a company around one guy? I mean, like, what's the goal here? Like a long-term thing? Or are you just trying, am I trying to just draw a big number at one show? What am I trying to do here?
You're a small business and you want to be a bigger business.
Okay, well, can I afford Dwayne Johnson's price? Probably not.
Well, and he's not active, so we'll take him off the table. He's not active. Austin's not active. He's you know, because they would probably still be the first two guys all these years later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is really tough.
Like, if it is, because like I feel like Roman Reigns has the most cachet, right? Because people see him as the face of the. As the poster child of the number one current brand. So if you poached him, people would think that's a very significant thing that you did. But do I think like Roman Reigns is the most like talented guy in the business? No, probably I don't. I mean, if you're thinking long term, and plus he might have one foot, who knows how long he wants to keep doing this?
Yep.
I don't know. Is it MJF? I mean, he's what, 26 years old? That's younger than Rock when he hit his stride. That's younger than Triple H when he hit his stride.
He also might Kevin Durant on you, though, at some point.
That's true, but I kind of I really don't want anyone sticking.
No, those are good guesses. Anyway, Ryan, what do you think?
Yeah.
Man, that is really tough. I happen to be wearing a Bryan Danielson shirt right now, so I'm looking at myself in the stream thinking, should I just go with him? Obviously, he's not going to wrestle probably a long while more, but he's also a guy who's like so brilliant behind the scenes that he could help you out with the growth, you know, and training people and stuff like that. So there'd definitely be some motivation in picking him there. I think just pure star power, I'd have to go with Roman probably, just because... Yeah. If you just take the public at large and you're starting a wrestling company and you sign him, that's going to, you know, turn eyeballs. People know who he is now. He's been all over the media. So, boy, I'd say it's tough to not go with Roman right now. Not that he's my favorite wrestler, but just star power wise.
It's a great pick, but I like the MJF pick. because you're looking at sort of opportunity and someone who's betting on themselves constantly. You're going to have to pay him, you know, probably not as much as you'd have to pay Roman. So there's a thing there with a budget. All of that is interesting. I think those are probably the two best picks. There's a Punk thing, but you know, Punk did retire and he lost the love of wrestling. Some of it forced out of him by WWE. You know, there's a Moxley, there's a Danielson, there's a Bron Breakker if you want to go there, but you know, that's sort of probably a little bit down the list. But anyways, very happy that you guys joined me. I wanted to get that last question in because, you know, I think that's stuff that people who are watching or who are listening on podcast, reach out to me if you have your picks of who would be your number one pick at WLPF4W. But we're done here. So Kyle and Ryan, you can listen to their podcast, Top Rope Nation, available everywhere. Also, check out their YouTube page. And just quickly give out your personal Twitter handles if people want to follow you.
Yeah, you can find me at Ryan Droste. That's Droste. And the show at Top Rope Nation.
It's two convenient Twitter handles there, buddy. I am at TRP Kyle.
All right. So thank you to both of you. I'm sure this audience will see you guys again at some point very soon for this show. WLP F4W is our Twitter handle here. For Ryan and for the boss, Kyle Ross, I'm Double G. We'll see you when we see you. Peace out.